Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The balance of power in the Middle East is in flux. Israel no longer has its vaunted deterrent supremacy. What is called the Axis of Resistance is challenging Israel and, importantly, its Western patrons. Crosstalking the Middle East, I'm joined by my guest, Wilmer Leon in Washington. He is a political scientist, author, and a radio talk show host. In New York, we have Lionel. He is a legal and media analyst. And in Marseille, we cross to Freddy Ponton. He is an independent journalist and a contributor at 21st Century Wire. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Wilmer, let me go to you first in Washington. You know, you could say the word change, but, you know, what is changing? Everything is changing. It's something we have never seen in our lifetime. As I talked about, Israel's supremacy in the Middle East is very much being challenged right now. But the biggest change that I see going on here is, and we make when we look at Iran's retaliatory strike for Israel's attack on its consulate in Damascus, is that Israel could only defend itself with the help and assistance of the United States, the UK, and France. That is a very interesting thing, because is Israel's survival based on how much assistance it can get from the West? And is that good for the West? Go ahead in Washington.
Israel's survival is totally dependent upon the West from a number of perspectives, not only militarily and financially, but ideologically as well. And what Iran has demonstrated is that the Zionist mythology of supremacy, superiority, and the ability to protect the citizens of Israel is now been proven to be nothing but a myth. And that is really rattling the psyche of not only, because when you look at a lot of the Israelis, they have dual citizenship.
Yep.
They are fleeing.
Yep.
They are fleeing the country like a sinking raft. And what Iran has now demonstrated, not only to Israel, but to the United States, is we can strike you when we want to, where we want to, and you can't do a thing about it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, because this is, we're going into kind of a sense of perpetual conflict here. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, he said in the last news cycle that he is a wartime speaker. What war is he referring to, and did anyone vote for it? Lionel.
No one can figure out what he's even talking about. And the other day, which was the most telling, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, say what you want, often says things that makes you say, she said, is he being blackmailed? I mean, who is he? There's something about when Republicans take that position. I must say, gentlemen, that closer to home, what is also frightening to me is how the college campus, which used to be this bastion, this intersection, this marketplace of free ideas, crazy during Vietnam War, Columbia, we're actually having people, and I don't want to be pithy or punny about it, but it's not anti-Semitism, but it's anti-semanticism, where the semantics, people, we actually are having college presidents come up and explain, are you allowing somebody to think this? Violence is one thing, absolutely. But what I'm hearing is, are you allowing someone to think this? And I'm thinking to myself, can this be happening? Where are the civil libertarians, gentlemen, the liberals and the Berkeley free speech movement, who says, wait a minute, free speech is not conditioned upon the subject matter, it's conditioned upon the idea. So not only when this is all over, we're going to have this cancer that is metastasizing within our system, and I don't know if there's any treatment for it.
Well, Freddie, this is kind of an extension of what Lionel was saying here, is that, you know, we've seen that Israel is extremely vulnerable right now. But it also means that the United States is very vulnerable, because, if this phrase ironclad commitment to Israel, that means the United States is committing to get into to fight Israel's wars. Is that a very good idea, certainly for not the United States, but for the entire region and for the global economy here? Do the Americans understand that what they're signing up for, particularly from what we understand, the cost that Israel had to pay and its Western patrons on the night of the Iranian retaliation was $1.3 billion. Can they do that night after night after night? Go ahead, in Marseille.
Sure. Thank you, Peter. Yes, of course, this is a very tricky situation. I think the United States got itself in a little bit of a pickle, to be honest with you. And my analysis of this Iranian strike and the participations of the United States in defending Israel has shown different aspects of this conflict and also perhaps different reason why the United States intervene. So it's very important to really analyze that, to understand, was the United States actually just defending Israel, or also were they trying to protect, basically, and make sure the entire defense and air missile defense system in Israel was not being saturated? And I think the United States, to some extent, was trying to avoid an embarrassment. Because we are defending a military-industrial complex here. And I think that the billions of dollars that have been spent in the missile air defense in Israel is almost a pilot project for the world to see.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone in the United States would want to have a public embarrassment. So I think it was interesting to see them moving into the Iraqi airspace and deploying a complete air defense operation with a refueling anchor, allowing basically, to diminish that possibility.
Well, and I think Freddie, that said differently, I absolutely agree with you, is that not only was Israel's air defenses tested, America's was being tested. That's what you're getting at here. You know, Wilmer, you said something very interesting here. We have to make a differentiation, because I'm glad we have Lionel here, because he's a nut for semantics here. But, you know, what we see is the defense of Israel. That's the narrative. But no, that's not true. This is defense of a Zionist project. We have to keep separating these two things out. Go ahead in Washington.
Well, that for as much as the Israeli lobby wants to conflate Judaism and Zionism, and to say that to be anti-Israel is anti-Semitic. No, no, no. This is not an issue about Judaism. This is not an issue about Jews. This is an issue about Zionists. And what people need to understand is not all Zionists are Jews and not all Jews are Zionists. Joe Biden has told us very clearly, and folks, you can look this up, I am a Zionist. And that is
Don't you think he has been tricked too? Because he thinks it's pro-Israel. That's what, I think you brought it up. We were all brought up to make them the same, synonymous, and they're not. Go ahead. You were about to say something very important, and I interrupted. Go ahead.
Well, I've always understood them to be different. It was always made very clear to me that those two were not the same. But this is a Zionist settler colonial project. And there are many that believe that as goes Israel, so goes the rest of the ideology and the settler colonial projects. And that's why so many in the United States are so staunchly committed to this project. And as we see, as went with South Africa, this is now coming to a close.
Yeah, Lionel, one of the things that's very interesting, if you look at the reactions to Israel's assault on Iran's consulate in Damascus and then the retaliation here, what we're getting from Western capitals is just utter nonsense. I mean, it's just bald-faced lies, the way they're interpreting it. And this is dangerous, because this is what they're telling the public, that Israel won. No, Israel's in big trouble, and so are its patrons. Basically, who's controlling this narrative, Lionel?
As a lawyer, I know a little bit about the notion of provocation, self-defense, and violation of territory, trespass. And I It absolutely astounds me how nobody will ever even say, even in a prefatory side note. Now, I recognize the fact that, yes, under international law, the attack on a consulate or embassy is indeed considered an act of war. However, you know, or just even pay lip service to it. Just, I know this may seem rather inconsistent. It's like it never happened. I don't want to bring this completely derail this incredibly important conversation, but I call it the Kate Middleton phenomenon. We just stop talking about it. Next. Don't talk about it. Just keep talking. We will talk as though this never happened. We're just going to remove and dissect this incredible portion. Now, remember, if I were to take this scenario, if I could go back in time and say, let me ask you, if country A did this to country B and country C, what would you think? And ask the rest of the world what they would think. Believe me, nobody would come up.
But that's the whole point, Lionel. Let me go to Freddie here. Lionel is absolutely right with his analogy, but there's always the exception, meaning Israel doesn't have to observe international law. In the West, protecting Israel doesn't either. Freddie.
Well, absolutely. And in relation to your questions with who controls the narrative, I think clearly we need to dig slightly a bit further when we talk about the Western media. Clearly, the Western medias are controlled by the globalists, the neocons, all the little elite power clubs. But we cannot deny the fact that Israel has a great deal of influence in the Western media. At least we feel it in France and in Europe. So we can expect the narrative to be pro-Israeli in a certain way. And that's how things goes for at least the last past 20 years in Europe. And I'm sure the United States is feeling it again. But I think there is also some clues as far as to understand what the media is doing and how they're treating this information. And we've seen them over the last past 3-4 months, literally slowly abandoning basically the conflict in Gaza.
Okay, Freddie, I have to jump in here. I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the changing Middle East. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the changing Middle East. Okay, let's go back to Freddie on Marseille. You were making a point before we went to the break. Please finish.
Sure, Peter. Thank you. Well, basically, we've seen the mass media, whether it's in Europe, in the United States, they've slowly abandoned the coverage of the Gaza atrocities.
Yes.
So this has been going on since really January, February onward. We saw, and we can see that on national televisions, we're getting very little insight on actually Israel improvement of the situation, the efforts that is made to comply with the International Court of Justice order, if you will. So there's clearly, this is done on purpose. And this Iranian strike is very interesting because, as you said, the way it's treated, it is treated as a victory, but it's clearly not. And clearly the footage that has been provided by Israel as far as the extent of the damage in their air base in Navatim and Raman air base in the Negev Desert is just simply not true. It's just not what you would expect from a ballistic airstrike. So again, we've been lied to. It is the other way to present that.
Yeah, Wilmer, in Washington, it's very interesting. I'm glad what Freddie brought up, the media coverage over here. Isn't it interesting, and I'll go to Lionel on this because it has to do with semantics, okay? But, you know, we hear from Western leaders, there should be restraint. You know, everybody should be. Well, they didn't call for restraint for 6 months as Israel's genocidal campaign was being played out in Gaza in front of our eyes. I mean, they want restraint for not for humanitarian reasons, apparently. Go ahead in Washington. It's bizarre.
Well, two things. One, as it relates to the narrative, there was a piece recently that was talking about the fact that the New York Times has decided they're not going to use the words Palestine and they're not going to use the words occupied territories, or at least are going to minimize the amount to which they do. That speaks volumes about the narrative. Now, to restraint, there's a whole lot of rhetoric, rhetorical calls for restraint, but there's not been a restraint on providing the military hardware to the Zionist colony of Israel so that they continue to engage in genocide. There hasn't been a restraint on American generals in the Israeli war rooms helping to plan and to orchestrate the genocide. So there's a lot of rhetoric calling for restraint, but there is zero real active restraint by the United States, because President Biden could bring an end to this in 2 days just by simply saying, we're not sending you any more hardware. We're not sending you any more money.
Yeah, but Lionel, Biden is never going to make that telephone call. Even we hear from official circles that if Israel wants to retaliate against directly against Iran, the United States is not going to be part of that. Do you believe that for 1 second? I don't. But just for the reason that Freddie was brought up is that their missile defense systems are all in commingled here. The United States is going to know exactly what it's doing, and it will give its tacit approval. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lionel.
Well, no, gentlemen, I find history being rewritten just as an example. In New York and in Golden Gate Bridge and elsewhere, when you have pro-Palestinian protesters, the way the narrative works is, well, there they go again. Complete and utter traffic chaos. How dare these? And I'm thinking to myself, imagine during the height of the Civil War, of Civil Rights Movement, when Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy and others, the famous Edmund Pettus Bridge incident. Boy, there they go again, jamming up traffic. No, we heralded this. It's interesting. The famous I Have a Dream speech. I'm sure parking was terrible that day when this event happened. Peter, you and I have talked about in the old days when we used to think about the Native American. We even harkened back to Sasheen Littlefeather and Marlon Brando and Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and occupation, Mandela, apartheid. We seem to at least indicate a sentience, an ability to appreciate at least the concept. That's gone now in some circles.
That's gone. That's right. You know, it Lionel, as always, brings up a really good point here. Freddie, it shows to me, you know, the West likes to lecture the world. It shows that it's virtuous and it must follow its ways. But this is just neocolonialism all over. And it's an ugly form of it. I mean, it's not even, well, at least we're bringing drinking water and literacy, okay? The mask is completely off right now, okay? Israel has to be protected from these brown people. Who cares where they came from and who cares where they're going? That's how blunt it is right now. Freddie.
Yes, as you guys were saying, I think it's important to understand the embarrassment with the Zionist project, you know, because it was established as an ethno-nationalist state in Palestine. So, as I say, ethnic-based states, they might survive, you know, if they are small countries, and more importantly, if they're not violent, if they're not aggressive. But the state like Israel, which was built on settler nationalism, is definitely outdated in the 21st century. Yep. And everybody knows that. Yeah, it's really not a secret. Maybe for the media, the mass press, but in the diplomatic circle, when you speak with diplomats, everybody knows that, look, this needs to go. It's an embarrassment, and it's creating more problems than it needs to. The problem is that we have a political survival on the table here, and the media, and they've been literally for the last past 6 months, you know, in a crisis communication mode, meaning that they've always are to confirm, or they have to kind of justify the atrocity that we are seeing. So anything that is happening is treated on a crisis, on an emergency business. A little bit, pretty much the same way that our government is currently, you know, applying and governing in the West. You know, it's all emergency. Everything is an emergency. And that is creating difficulty because now it's catching up with them. And that's exactly what happened, obviously, last weekend with the Iranian strike. People got to see actually the truth. So it was a kind of a, you know, wake-up call, reality check, if you will.
Yeah, it was a eureka moment in many ways. Wilmer, it's very interesting to me that the West invented, essentially, the concept of international law and equal treatment under it. And now we have countries like South Africa and Nicaragua saying, yeah, well, why don't we apply these laws equally right now? Because it's really interesting. Who did Joe Biden turn to first after Israel was attacked? the G7. Oh, the former colonial powers. I mean, and they have no sense of irony. That the same people that, exported their ideology of colonialization, they're the ones who are going to still decide what the world should think and do. It's really amazing to me. Go ahead.
Well, I believe, is very, very clearly an example of the power of the rise of China, the power of the rise of Russia on the international stage with BRICS. Joe Biden turns to G7 when it's really now the rising of BRICS, Brazil, India, Russia, and China, South Africa, and the other 17 countries, I think, that now want to join the organization.
Could you imagine what the acronym would be if you had all of them in there? I think we need to outsource that to Lionel. He could probably get us a word, okay? I'm sorry for the levity. Keep going in Washington.
And I think it's also important to understand that BRICS, for the most part, is an economic organization.
Yep.
And what the United States is fighting, they're fighting the rise and development of economies, and they're using militarism to do so. So these other countries, South Africa and others, that are turning to the International Court of Justice and the Criminal Court, their voices would have fallen upon deaf ears 10 years ago, because there would not have been the counterforce to make this, take it from a unilateral power dynamic to a multilateral power dynamic. And when I say power dynamic, I'm not only talking militarism, because, when China decides that it's had enough of U.S. carrier groups in the South China Sea, they'll send a hypersonic missile in there to solve that problem. But the issue now is de-dollarization. The issue is challenging economies, and the United States' only solution is militarism.
Well, Lionel, we've mentioned the President of the United States, Mr. Biden, here a number of times, and Freddie's kind of alluded to it, the shift in narrative. All of us were brought up on the propaganda against the mullahs and Iran and all that. It was part of our everyday news diet. Is that what Biden is going to do now? Is that, shift the attention away from Gaza, which is, dogging him at every single campaign stop, and just beat the drums of war against Iran? Is that going to work? Because he has to be careful, because the war actually could happen, Lionel.
Well, if ever you're going to shift the narrative of anything, there is no better country in the world than here. I could take you gentlemen to Times Square, a couple of blocks from me, and offer $1,000 to anybody who knows what BRICS is, and they'll think it's a line from a Pink Floyd song. They have no idea, none whatsoever. I also have my questionable, dubious intellectual friends who will give the most persuasive narrative as to their disinclination to support a war in support of Zelensky. And it makes sense. They say, now, let's take those precepts, those concepts, and apply them here. Oh, no, this is different.
It's different.
What's different about it? And it's interesting how we can, on a moment's notice, we can focus and turn. There are people who still think that the Middle East, that Iran, Hezbollah, the Houthis, that this is some prehistoric, almost this antiquarian group of people with spears who live in a world. I'm serious. They don't understand that you're talking about really serious, sizable contingents. And the thing which scares me the most is when people have it in their heart, when they have a desire, when they have a kind of blood in their soul, that's a mixed metaphor. But Americans don't have that. We're saying, we intellectually understand this. But you're talking about people who live and breathe this. And I'm the first rule of war, Sun Tzu notwithstanding, is make sure you understand the capacity for commitment of anybody you're engaging, because you're going to where they live. This is their future, their family, their history, their provenance. This is serious.
Well,
business.
Essentially, Lionel, what you're saying is, and we've talked about BRICS, and we're talking about changes in the Middle East and elsewhere. So when the American empire collapses, the last people to learn about it will be Americans, right?
I'm sorry to say, I think you're correct.
I know I'm correct. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, New York, and in Marseille. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.